Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode 118 of Teaching Tales, the podcast totally devoted to sharing stories from the world of education. I am your host, Brent Coley, former fourth and fifth grade teacher, former elementary principal, current elementary coordinator of education, where I support teachers and administrators in my district. And today, I'm excited because we're going to talk about music. Yet to meet somebody who doesn't love music in some capacity, and I'm really excited. We were just talking before hitting the record button. I get to talk with Kevin Honeycutt. Kevin, how are you?
Good. Good to be on your podcast.
Oh, thank you. I was mentioning before that first time caller, long time listener type thing. I have been following your work for, I think it's like 15 years online, but I think this is the first time I believe that we've ever spoken in person. So we were virtually at a conference together about 15 years ago, but that's about it. So for anyone who is not familiar with who you are, what you do, give us a brief little bio intro of who is Kevin Honeycutt.
We'll do. So is this a video or audio podcast?
It's going to be audio. We're video right now, but I will strip the audio for the audio podcast.
So let me paint a picture with
words. There we go.
So I'm just going to do a fast jaunt. Okay. So I'm the kid who grew up in poverty in foster homes, the kid who can't focus in class, the kid who always heads straight to the arts in every new school. I went to school in 20 states. Dad was always breaking the law and we were always bugging out. He called it the midnight run. I wrote a book called that about how I got out of poverty and what did that. But home base was always the arts. I think it's because in those classrooms, the teachers bent the system to match the kids. They didn't bend the kids to match the system. Mm-hmm. And you could feel that. You could feel that they were buying space for you to exist. And they were grown-up versions of you. And you thought, wow, if he can grow up and keep a job, maybe I can. I swear to God, I became an art teacher because of that. Now, I could have flipped a coin and been a music teacher or a theater teacher. Mm-hmm. I just thought there's probably, I don't know, I literally flipped a coin twice and ended up teaching visual art and then teaching guitar on the side and directing the musicals in my school. But a lot of that was just having been on stage and doing things. And it all started like in eighth grade, and Dad's usually doing his shenanigans. He's drinking, he thinks you're nuts. But I'm going to this school, and someone talks me into being in a play. And so I'm in a play. And, you know, usually Honeycutts, if you look at the kids from trauma, they're not usually allowed to participate in anything in school. They're told not to, because when you stand out, people notice you, and then they might notice the family. They might notice Dad. They might notice how many times you're absent. They might, SRS gets called, now you're in a foster home. So we learned quickly, be a secret genius. If you're good at something, you don't have to let everyone know. So you know you've got kids that are kind of hiding for all kinds of reasons. And usually they're sitting in the back row and they're disguised as kids who don't care. Because it's easier to act like I don't care than to break my own heart and admit to you I'm not allowed to care. So it was those teachers, those arts teachers, who just saw straight through. They saw straight through the veneer. And it must be because they were like me. I don't know. Back then, I couldn't reason it out. It just seemed like there's where it is. The overworked math teacher and English teacher and science teacher had all these caseloads, and everyone had to take their class. It was required. So these people were just tired. And I get it. I don't blame anyone. But in the arts, you know, kids can choose to come or not come. And so you ended up getting these kids who decided they wanted to come and stay. So it was a different world in those arts classes, I think. And yes, you get some kids from money, whose parents bought them great lessons. And you get that kid who, like me, who sings by ear. And if I'm not sitting next to Charlie Little or Jack Gilstrap in college, I would lose my music scholarship because I can't read music. But I'm just a millisecond behind the guy beside me. As long as he's on pitch, I'm on pitch. And I was able to just do that all the way through college and not lose my music scholarship. So anyway.
Wow. That, I mean, as you said, a couple things resonated there. I mean, in my role right now, I oversee our elementary visual and performing arts program. And just today, I was speaking with the teacher who was talking about how what you said kind of reminded me of what she said. She said that one of her daughters is highly creative. And I literally jotted down what she said. She said, the arts helped me survive 12 years of schooling.
Absolutely.
It helped me survive 12 years of schooling. And I think that so many kids, whether it's band, whether it's theater, whether it's whatever, whether it's PE, many kids, they're not rolling out of bed to do the long division lesson. They're rolling out of bed for what you just described. So,
and there are, you know, those other classes. When I taught, my biggest struggle was getting kids who wanted to take my class third hour to survive until seventh hour. And how do you talk them into it? And what they'll say is that all of these classes indict me, but almost none of them invite me. I don't feel seen. It seems like everything I'm bad at is in a spotlight in those classes. And everything I'm good at is in a spotlight in your class. And so I picked art because no one bothers the art teacher, because largely no one understands the art teacher. So people kind of left me alone. And I did that. And I'm not a fan of teachers building a cave and hiding there. That is not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is I can build relationships with kids. I can lift them up. No one's coming in and saying, Kevin, you don't have that kind of time. You've got to cover content, not recover students. And if that day had ever come, I would have just quit or gone somewhere else because I didn't get into it, you know, so my kids' sketchbooks could win league art contest or not any of that. I taught life through the arts. Mm-hmm. I didn't teach the arts for the art's sake. And I sometimes run into problems with purists who take some exception to, they might see as my lackadaisical relationship with rigor. You know, that word rigor has always been a problem for me because it implies pain, that this should hurt some, this should hurt. And it sounds medieval, right? Pillage, plunder, and rigor. It sounds some awful word left out. So I don't like that word. It's like kids don't hurt enough. We got to hurt them more somehow, and it'll be more meaningful for them if they suffer. I don't think that's necessary. I think if they love the class, they'll do much better. You know, Csikszentmihalyi wrote this book called Flow, and it's about cognitive flow. Are you familiar with that book, Flow?
I'm not.
It's about this idea that when you get into flow, right, and in the arts, I see people get into flow, playing piano, playing guitar, singing, whatever your thing is that you love. And a lot of times a great teacher, they'll get into flow while teaching, but they can't help it. It's almost like the muse is right there in the room. Everyone listening right now, you will know what I'm talking about if you've ever been in a class or a place where something's going on and suddenly it's over, whether the bell rings or they flick the lights or whatever, and you think, it's over? Already over?
You don't even realize it's over.
And you're angry that it's over because you were in flow. You literally lost track of time. And the brain wants to think that way and be that way, but often school is more almost punitive, almost mm-hmm. not.
Well, I liked what you said at the beginning of that we bend students. Historically, we bend students to the system and not the system to the students. And hopefully we're, by increasing arts classes and things like that. I mean, in California where I live, we've got a Prop 28 has provided funding that has never before been seen in my 28 years in the field specifically for the arts, where we're hiring people to strictly do this. And I love it. I mean, what you said, I've seen it in terms of some of the students where you're giving kids an opportunity to shine in a way that they may not feel comfortable shining. I remember one student, it was one of my first or second years of teaching. He really struggled with mathematics and with reading and with writing, but you put something that he needed to manipulate in his hands. Like we were making baskets when we were studying the Native Americans. And I'm telling you, this kid done. And he was the go-to guy in the class that every one of our, or that sculpting something with Play-Doh, it was like, boom, he was done because, and just the look on his face, like, I'm good at this. I mean, I may struggle in other areas, but I'm good at this. And my peers see that I'm good at this. So, so I know that you're a big fan of stories. I'm a big fan of stories, which is why I'm hosting this podcast. Do you have any specific, I'm sure you do. I think you said before we start, you could riff on this for a long time. Any specific stories of how providing students opportunities in music or in the arts, other arts have turned a student's life around, turned a teacher's life around, what, I mean, been able to do for a student, what it did for you?
You know, a couple ways I can go here. Kids call me. I had a 49-year-old student call me. That's how old I am. And when kids are at these, what's the word? When they're at these touchstone moments in life, they call me. They hit me on Twitter. They hit me on Facebook. They hit me on Instagram. They hit me. I'm Yoda to them. And I didn't know I was going to be Yoda. But they remember. And this kid, this is 2 weeks ago, calls me and he says, you know, I had a rough time. I don't know if you know this. He was in my first class as an art teacher. He said, I didn't have it together. I wasn't like what you thought, probably. So I was being bullied. My life was chaos. It was out of control. He said, you know, I've been through so much since then. I've been suicidal. I've been an alcoholic. And he goes on and he says, your class probably saved my life. And I said, how? And he said, it was simple. I felt seen. He said, every kid deserves to feel seen. So as much as I like the arts for their own sake, what I like is the freedom the arts grants us to allow kids to become, not what we've been trained to make them become. Okay, I'm not a fan of that. Mm-hmm. Drill and kill in the arts is just as bad as drill and kill in social studies or science or what have you. No, I mean giving them the freedom to try on different ideas, different aesthetics, different thoughts, different styles, different genres in music and whatever. And it may be that they're hating theory and they're hating theory and suddenly they find jazz and they're on their way. And that kid that you just talked about, you know, when you're doing project-based learning, and I did a lot of project-based learning, because that kid who can draw, and maybe he doesn't have it together, maybe he can't plan a budget, maybe he can't do the hard stuff, the logistical stuff, but he's an amazing artist and he can draw anything. And every group needs that person. And I'm hearing more and more talk about what AI is bringing to the world. And there's some people talking about the fact that we're probably going to double down in the arts like never before, because we're going to have all the other stuff taken care of. Mm-hmm. And what they're going to need is creative ideas about what to do with all that new power. But let me give you an idea of why I think arts, music in particular, is important. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm on a flight and I'm reading this the Sky Mall article called Brain Song. You can probably Google it, I'm not sure. Brain Song. And I'd never heard of Rodolfo Linas, L-L-I-N-A-S. He wrote this article called Brain Song. And what he was talking about in there is that the brain hums at frequency between 0 and 33 hertz. So right now, Brent, if you're like totally listening to what I'm saying, if you're like bought in, I own you, right? You're leaning forward, you're in flow. Mm-hmm. You're probably... You know, the neurons that are being engaged right now are oscillating at 33 hertz. And so what happens, and how he discovered this, is he asked a question. How can an electric eel shock you with simultaneity? That means shock you down its lateral side, and all the neurons fire at exactly the same time. You see, something's at work here, and it's not chemical. It's not what we were taught in college. It's not, you know, inhibitory or excitatory neurotransmitters are released into the synapse. So the action potential can bridge the synapse and go to the adjacent neuron. We were taught that. That process takes too long. It wouldn't work. So he said, something else is happening. So he started studying the brain, three orders of magnitude. I don't know anyone with a more complete owner's manual of the brain than Rodolfo Linas, a guy who answers my calls when we talk. This guy, I think he's got it figured out, wrote the first owner's manual of the human brain. So yes, I ate up everything after that, right? How we became, how we became creatures that refer to ourselves as I. We can step outside ourselves and see ourselves again. And he wrote a book called The I, letter I, The I of the Vortex. And if you're into brains, this is your book. The first few hundred pages, pretty tough stuff. The last 100 pages, operational stuff you could take to the classroom. Okay, so I read that book and called him and said, oh my God, can I be the first one to take this stuff to the classroom? He said, please do. So what? Okay, so let's say you're oscillating at 33 hertz, right? And that means you're totally focused. Now, the other kid beside you, she's pretending to pay attention. She's oscillating at 5 hertz. And she's brain dead, but she looks like she's paying attention. So you're fooled. Sometimes I wish you could put a halo on every kid in your class.
Who's faking it?
The Chinese have done something similar to this already, if you start looking that up, but in a way that seems like a Viking ship where we want them all to row harder. But if I could see all the brains, I could say, you know what? I thought this was my best lesson. Turns out it's not. There's only one kid oscillating at 33 hertz, and that's because he's got a comic book inside his textbook. He's looking at that. So just because you're oscillating at 33 hertz doesn't mean it's the teacher causing it. So I did this thing. They made this prosumer device. It was called the Melon Headband, and I was very curious about this because I have ADHD. I don't know if you can tell already. And with medication, I'm pretty operational. I also had the dyslexia in school, and so I've had some struggles with learning. So I wanted to see my brain. This Melon Headband, you could put it on, open up the app, and you could see your brain in real time. You could see what frequency you're oscillating at in real time, left and right hemisphere, and from 0 to 33 hertz. You could also control that. You could think. You could focus and move a dot up, and that dot would fall down if you lost attention. So that immediately, athletes start using these to focus on the game. Military starts using these to focus on the battlefield. There was a lot of people who were very interested in this technology, and they didn't last long before they got sold. And so out there are still some consumer products out there that do some things. What I'm interested in is seeing cause and effect, what the brain's doing. So I took this on stage in front of 1,000 people, and I've got my brain on the screen back there, left and right hemispheres. And I tell them what's going on. I said, I'm wearing this right now. These 4 gold contacts are touching my forehead, and it's reading what my brain is doing. They were fascinated, of course. And I said, I've got this guitar. I'm going to play a song. What do you think will happen? If I start playing a song, will my focus go up, my focus go down, or my focus stay the same? And most of the audience said, your focus will go up. So I start playing a song, and my focus stayed the same. And I said, you wonder why? And they said, yes. And I said, I know the song. I said, now let me play you a song that I don't quite have, but I want so badly. So I start playing Amy by Pure Prairie League. It is that da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na- start doing that, and even though it sounds bad, my focus is way through the roof. I said, so what does this mean for the way we design instruction? Hmm. What does it mean? It should be challenging enough that it's doable and doesn't make you quit, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a sweet spot there.
Yeah.
Where they want, and by the way, that should probably be individualized per student. So I'm talking to you and you're doing a watercolor and the girl beside you is doing a batik and the one beside you, it's, let's say it's art and you all get to choose what you're working on and the kid beside you is doing a sculpture. My job is to throw some ideas out there and some questions and some challenges out there to keep them growing, keep them thinking, and keep them oscillating at 33 hertz. So let me just give you one crazy idea I had. I thought, what would happen? Can I initiate 33 hertz? Now, once it started, can I keep it going? So a lot of bass, if you listen to bass in cars, you can say I want 33 hertz and it'll boom, 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 boom. It's actually at 33 hertz. So I thought if you assign that to a part of the auditory spectrum that was outside of our awareness, so the brain really does know it's there, but your consciousness doesn't. If that was playing in the background, and it sounds like a terrible Skinnerian, you know, mindscape, you know, from some movie or something,
yeah.
But we should at least as educators be trying. So what I'm trying to get to with all of this hertz talk is that is music. That is music. Mm-hmm. That music does this thing. Music, it starts and it stops. My 9-year-old right now is working on a song for his recital, and his teacher just said, Don't stop. Don't stop. It's not a song if it stops. You got to keep going, even if it's bad. And each time you go through, it'll get better and better and better and better. But music doesn't stop, she said. And I thought, wow, that's pretty good. You think about that. Life doesn't stop. But unless it stops at the top of the hour and you don't think about it again until biology, second hour tomorrow. So this is why the brain doesn't remember. I think the brain was designed to be temporal. Okay, so memories are stored and inculcated in cooperation with the passage of time. No one talks about that. Tell me when you've heard temporal learning or temporal instruction in your career. Something's come up? No, because no one talks about it. But with a great teacher, let's say a band concert, you're working on a song. That song starts and stops. It's temporal in nature. You understand? So you hold it in one piece. By the way, that's called a fixed action pattern. Anything that you know in one piece, Linus calls those fixed action patterns. These are things in the brain that you know, or you think you know, or you're working on, whatever that might be. And music is very much that. So if we could make instruction seem like music, and what happened is, I think instruction came along and got randomized, like when the iPod came out and you could put it on random. Mm-hmm. You remember how your brain knew the next song from the Eagles Live LP?
Yeah.
Right after Life in the Fast Lane, you knew the next song. And then the first time that didn't happen because you're on shuffle, your brain went, what?
Yeah.
Brain just said, I can no longer depend on this as a thing that I will know. I'll just have to wait and see what it does to me. So again, I don't think everything has to be predictable, but I think people are not talking enough about this. So I think, let's say you're at work and you're doing a project, software project, a video game, website, I don't care what it is, it has a temporal nature. We have to be done by Thursday at 9 o'clock. The customer will be here by then. We have to have a rough draft done by Wednesday for a quick peek, and then we got 24 hours to make it right for the customer. That's what you got there. You got pressure, you got a little anxiety, you got something that's doable, but you got to stay focused. You got to stay with it. And it's all very temporal by nature. But I do a worksheet today and a worksheet tomorrow, discussions, questions 7 through 12 on Thursday. None of that goes together. So when I say to my kid, ask him when he comes home, what'd you learn in school today? And he says, nothing.
Uh-huh.
He didn't learn nothing, or maybe he did. He can't recall. He can't rewind. It's not rewindable. Because it was all this disparate kinds of learning. We're in an art class, you're working in a sketchbook, you're working on a sketch, it's got to be done, you know, handed in by Thursday. You're working on ceramics. Look, after you throw the pot, then you dry the pot, then you fire the pot, then it's bisqueware, then you glaze the pot, then you fire it again, then you get to take it home. There's a process. It's not, you don't jump out halfway through and call it a worksheet. It's a process.
Yeah.
Same thing with choir. There's a performance. Band, there's a performance. Again, performance, I think, is the best thing in the world. And applause, or the lack thereof, is the best critique in the world.
Yeah.
Something about opening night. I directed theater for years and years and years. And I remember, man, I had kids who didn't take it seriously till opening night or till dress rehearsal. Then they got this look on their face, and I said, yes.
Uh-huh.
You're thinking tomorrow, I'm in the balcony either dying or being very proud, and you're on stage, and it's you. And next time, try to get that in the first week if you can. No first play, but we got to do it. So something about an audience, and when kids say, why do I need to know this? It's because there's not an audience. If there's an audience, you don't ask that question because people buy a ticket, and they'll be here Thursday at 7 p.m. sharp. That's why you need to know this. Performance demands that kind of that thinking. Okay, that's a long answer.
No, that's I was at 33 hertz that whole time. Well, it reminds me, I think it was Rushton Hurley years, and when he said, like, if he said it, I don't know if he was originally the one who said it, but if you have students do something for you, they want it to be good enough. If they do it for the world, they want it to be good. Which that's is kind right. of what like, if you're performing, it's like, well, if it's just for the teacher, well, how long does the essay have to be? But it's kind of like podcasting. I used to podcast with my students, and it's kind of like it was going in iTunes. And when they knew it wasn't just me listening to it, it was going to go in iTunes, and the world potentially could be, can we re-record? I didn't like the way that, like, I want it to be good, not just good enough. And I love how you said,
To put a finer point on what you just said, because I like what you said, and Rushton is one of my heroes, and known him for a long time. Are schools global or snow global? I think most of them are snow global. And so we build these things that we hide their resume. And if I come to your school, I can find out that your kids are great, but the college isn't coming and the workforce isn't coming. So we have no right to hide the resume, but we do. We don't mean to. And you get that crazy teacher who wants to break the glass and let the kids communicate. And they get in trouble because there's no policy yet in the district. And there's got a kid who wants to break the glass. And he's got his own YouTube channel. And you guys are trying to teach him introduction to filmmaking with software. And he's been doing it with his phone and has, half a million viewers.
Followers.
He out qualifies the teacher, and we're mad at him for that. No. It's time to loose the hounds. A 16-year-old girl closed Taco Bell last night. She set the alarm, counted the drawer, locked the door, and was trusted by a man with his entire livelihood. Second hour tomorrow, she'll raise her hand and ask for permission to urinate. Same kid. So what are we doing? What are we doing with all this power that these kids have? The arts, it's almost the genie out of the bottle already. So why not just let that lead us. Let that lead us. And there are things, look, I had kids copy. I had kids plagiarize. I always knew when they traced. I'm not stupid. I didn't out them. I didn't destroy them. I'd say, wow, that's really good. Could you freehand something like that? And they look at me like, I didn't say you traced Disney. I didn't say that. They love Disney. It's why they're art right now. So I'm not going to trace tell them they're wrong or bad. They're freshmen. We'll work on it. By sophomore year, it's coming along. You do the best you can to get every kid to develop the way they're supposed to develop. And they have big spurts. Kids will have this big, amazing summer, and suddenly they go from playing chords to playing lead to being better than you. And it just happens. They blow past you because they suddenly hit their own flow,
And isn't that what we want?
It
It's
should
kind
be.
of like, I mean, if we think of like technology, when you talk with teachers, like, well, I can't do that with my kids because I don't know how to do it. But you don't need to know. You don't, but they, but if they do, like it was when Minecraft came out, well, I don't know how to do Minecraft, but your kids do. So if you give them the opportunity to show their learning by building, you're studying missions in California, have them build a mission. I don't know how to do that, but he does. And if you give him the opportunity, the genie's already out of the bottle. Go with it. I love that. I
One
love
of
the
the
snow
best.
globe. The snow globe or global school. That's we have a lot of snow globe schools.
One of my favorite guys is a guy named, do you know Wesley Fryer?
I mean, not first, but I know of his work, yes.
The stuff he's doing that has kids in virtual worlds like Minecraft, building Martian colonies and lunar colonies, and all based on real research and NASA research. And oh my gosh, I don't know anyone doing better stuff than him right now. And I'm way into that kind of learning too, that kind of experiential learning, the kind of hands-on. Build something and have parents come and let the kids be docents on Friday night and let them own it. Let them own it and break the glass and don't be snow global and record all of that and put it on YouTube. And yes, someone might see it. And yes, someone might see it. Someone might see their resume. They might get hired. I'm tired of this secret genius thing. Emily Dickinson, when she died, she was not known. She had a trunk full of brilliance that they found after she died, and then she became famous posthumously. And I tell kids, don't be Emily Dickinson. Don't be a secret genius. Live out loud. And right now, I think they're living their puberty out loud. Because I think today's kids are raising themselves on digital playgrounds and nobody's on recess duty. And then we blame them when they fall off the slide. That's crazy, right? We got to live beside them. So I don't care how good my music is, it's published. If you go to your Alexa right now and you say, Alexa, play songs by Kevin Honeycutt, I'm going to sing in your kitchen right now. If you're listening to this right now, try that. I'm not saying my songs are good, they're published. They're published because I'm going to ask kids to publish. And if I don't have a single song that they can find, who am I to ask them to do anything that I am not doing? So I've always given myself the serum, injected myself with the same serum I'm asking them to take, whatever that is, to be brave, to be bold, to be out there. Look, people are going to say things about your stuff. Look at my guitar lessons on YouTube after we're done, Brett, and look how mean people can be. I leave all that there because I want them to see. I don't care what people say. I'm making free guitar lessons for kids who can't afford them. What are you doing? Usually when someone's mean to me, I look for their stuff and they have nothing.
Nothing.
I say, kids, these people are not your equal. They're not risking anything. They have no skin in the game. Ignore the ignorant. That's my thing. I tell them, look, we're living in a hateful world, a judgmental, angry world. And if our kids are scared to be global, they're never going to happen. They're going to stay local and they're always going to wonder if they could have. Man, my job is to just set fire to the thing and say, go. And I can give you examples of my students. You can go to my website and meet some of my students right now. In fact, I want you to, people who are listening, I want to check.
As we're winding down, I was just jotting a note. Yeah. Like,
how much time do we have? Because I got another 4 hours of stuff there. That I could.
I wish we did, but unfortunately.
Part one.
I would love to bring you back, but it's like I've got 5 minutes and 31 seconds because my Zoom account was downgraded recently and I didn't realize that.
So. I'll give you my login. You got mine. Okay. Don't pay. Let's do it. Don't tell Netflix. Okay. But let's do it. Okay. So. I'll call you back.
How exactly, if we get cut off, I'll slice this together, but how can somebody, because everything that you've said, like, number one, you've dropped so many nuggets that's just like, oh my gosh, if it was video, people would be seeing me go, like, that's amazing. But just genie's out of the bottle, give them the fact that you said, like, I'm published, and you give their students an opportunity, and you said, it may not be good, people may not like it, but I'm out there. And I go back to my student podcast. We put it out there, and there weren't many fifth grade classes. I can proudly say, however, 14 years ago, are you guys in iTunes? No, we are. Like, and my students could say that their work, their voices, their poetry that they had written and stuff like was in iTunes. So how can somebody, if they give us
First of all, way to go doing that kind of stuff. I'm starting a new Instagram channel right now where I'm sharing the filmmaking I was doing in 2002 with my kids. And the way we were doing that with analog video and composite video out on machines that were not really built for that kind of horsepower. But yeah, we did it. We broke the rules. And so congratulations, you know, you're a fellow journeyman. And I appreciate that for all of you people out there that are brave enough to try that new thing. If you go to kevinhoneycutt.org, that's HoneyCutt.org. Okay. And you go on that page, you're going to see my student in the middle of the page down lower. It's Wyatt. And I have this challenge right now, this AR music video challenge going. And if you click on that picture, you'll see that and you'll go to his page. Now, on that page there, you're going to see my student. You're going to be able to click and watch him on Jimmy Kimmel when his band played on Jimmy Kimmel. So he left my town, went to LA, puts a band together, hits the road, works hard. There's no shortcut, not a lottery. Makes Jimmy Kimmel. Now, also, there's other videos there where you can watch, and you'll see that his music is on Breaking Bad, and it's background music and all kinds of shows, and he's made it, and he's out there in California, and he's this great role model, and he's a kid that went farther, faster after he left school. He didn't want to play along. He didn't want to. He had his own ideas, and he just needed to be free, and he went for it. So right now, I'm challenging kids to use AR tools to make a music video that he likes, not just one that you like. You can talk to him, get a hold of him, find out who he is. Ask him what he wants. Here's his song, copyright free. He owns it. It sounds great, recorded in the studio. Okay, one of them nights. Show me a video. Show me you can use the tool. Now, AR, right, AI, and the tools that you're using is all about prompts, really good prompts, saying the stuff right. So that means you have to understand what you're asking for. I would hate it if you got it in one try without knowing what you were doing. That would be like an accident. You think you could do it again. You never can. You got to work on this if you're going to be good at this. Now, is this crazy? I don't think so. I think that all kinds of companies are going to say, Brent, we want you to use AI tools to save us some hours. Your customer is going to demand that you have those skills, whether you want. They're going to. And the other piece is you might not need $50,000 worth of gear to get started. You might just need your phone. And so I'm trying to be more agnostic. I know there are people who get angry and say it's robbing from the arts. I'm watching all of that too. I am an artist. I know that. But I also know it's a tsunami that's coming. So I want kids to do is work with it, like it's the muse. Work with it, understand where things come from, build things that clients want, that the world needs, right? Don't just plagiarize. Don't be a lazy person, right? Use it as one of the tools in your tool belt, right? People are going to use it. It's going to happen. So I'm challenging people to do this, to make their resume better by having this music video that rocks, that has 1,000 hits. The minute you make a video, I'm going to tell everyone, my 60,000 Twitter followers and everyone else, to give that video some love, to try to blow it up for you. Because I'm trying to show kids, here are some things you can do today, because you're going to do something. You are, because you've got the tools that are powerful. You're going to do something. So I'd rather you do something that gets you a job than something that loses your job.
Kevin, this is fantastic. And I literally, this is killing me. I'm under a minute now. And I don't want to get, I'm going to reach out to you. If you're open, I would love to have a part two, like you said, to continue this conversation. For people who are listening, kevinhoneycutt.org, go check it out. I've been going down the rabbit hole the last few days. Go in there. Go ahead.
At the front page, top, it's going to have all my social media. So please hit me on Instagram, whatever your flavor is. Instagram, Threads, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Don't be shy about that. And if there's something you heard and you're lit up about it, hit me up. Hit me up. Kevin, now how did you do that? How would you do that? Can you show me somebody who's done that already? What software would you use? Blah, blah, blah. I get those questions all the time, and I'm cool with that. If I don't know, I know someone who does. We'll ask your question on Twitter and get sick.
All right. So Zoom really does cut you off. So, but we're back. I think the last thing we were saying was you were talking about on the top page of your website is where you have the socials and reach out to you.
Hit me up. Hit me up if there's something we can. And I'm always, I just finished a 3-month collaboration with one student in Western Kansas and her teacher. And she turned one of my drawings into a CAD file that she's going to sell. It's a space capsule. And so I'm trying to help her put a business model together. It's really, really simple, but it's a beginning. That's the kind of thing I want to do. I'm working with a group of kids in Florida right now, and they're designing a guitar case for me. And they're these are junior high kids, and they're my little engineers. And what they're doing is coming up with a guitar case that opens up on stage and becomes a podium and then closes and goes back on the road again. And according to what I want. So they're giving me prototypes. And by the end of the school year, which is coming close, they're going to hand this guitar case to me, and I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to make a big deal out of their program. And so I'm looking for legit kids who want to do real world projects. And I don't care how small the sample is. Give me one crazy teacher and an administrator who won't fire them for being great. Because, you can get in trouble. Most good school innovation dies of domestic violence. I've seen it a million times. That Jedi that's on stage talking in a national conference that owns the room is in trouble at home. Uh-huh. Every time. You know this. Yeah, Moses didn't get to go to the promised land. You're never that. Who do you think you are? You know, one blade of grass grows too tall, we mow it. Mm. We have those teachers on every faculty. And we have got to find a way. When I love speaking at schools, because I get these people who lean forward and I can see them. They're younger versions of me. They're the Jedis. Yeah. They're the ones that are oppressed every day. And people say things to you like, Brent, you need to cut this crap out or we're all going to have to do it. Brent, it's like you just want to make headlines for yourself. And they don't see what you're doing. Right.
It's not about me. It's about it. You said earlier two things that I'm glad we were able to get back on Zoom, because there's two things that I just, you said one thing, you said like, or a version of this, we need to put it in we don't remember things. When you said your son comes home from school, what'd you learn in school today? And he says nothing. And you said more than likely the real truth is not nothing. The truth is he's not remembering. And if we can put things in a format that helps us remember, and I have a personal story, like in high school, I just turned 53 years old. That was a long time ago. In high school, I went to a private Christian high school. I took Spanish classes where our teacher wrote songs on his guitar, played it on his guitar, wrote songs, took Bible verses and translated them into Spanish. Mm. I learned that at the age of 16, now 53, and I can still recite those verses in Spanish because they were put to music.
Yeah.
It was put in a form that, like you said, like the brain hums and stuff like that. And I know the verses because I still sing the song, and it was an original song. And the other thing you said, and I don't remember exactly how you said it, but something like, if we put it out there, are we afraid they're going to get hired? Like no, they're going to get hired if we put something out there. Uh-oh, he's getting a guitar. I love it. Audio listeners, Kevin has donned the guitar.
I don't know what your sound settings are. If you guys set a certain way, tell me if you hear this.
I hear that.
Okay, cool. Now, two things. I'm going to tell you a story called The Tiger and the Deer. Okay, the tiger. Okay. So one of your ancestors, this explains, by the way, why you remember that song still.
Mm-hmm.
One of your ancestors, an upper Paleolithic hunter-gatherer, he woke up early one morning, earlier than ever. The woolly mammoth that his wife made the night before was really dry. He didn't say anything, but he's thirsty. He's got powerful thirst. So he goes out to the watering hole near his cave, and he's getting a drink, and he looks up, and there's a saber-toothed tiger across from the watering hole getting a drink too, and it goes, wow! And his brain has a thunderstorm. He's thunderstruck, right? Emotion cements learning. Okay, so he's thinking, here's what his brain thinks. Never drink water from watering hole when sun is low on ridge. He thinks that thought, and his thalamus and hypothalamus, the emotion centers of his brain, take a snapshot. And if he survives the subsequent chase with a saber-toothed tiger, he will remember forever with perfect fidelity not to do that. Now, that's a terrible example, but again, emotion cements learning. Now, second-hand story is the deer, okay? So you're driving home from work, and you get all the way to your driveway, and you pull in the driveway, and you think this thought, wow, I don't remember any of that drive, none of it. Mm. So what happened there? Here's what happened. Your brain said, Brent, you can think about lesson planning. You can think about parent-teacher conferences. I will take care of driving. Just shunt that down to level B awareness. If a deer jumps out, I will get you back in the game, hit you with adrenaline, and you'll be all right. So you make that deal subconsciously. But a deer never jumped out, so you forgot the drive. Could school be the drive without a deer? And so our job as educators is to find a way every day to make that deer jump out. Something they don't expect. Something that they come up with. Some freedom that they've been granted that surprises them. Look, the world is full of that. The brain craves novelty, right? And any job that doesn't provide novelty once in a while, you want to quit, right? It just eats your life. The dog's not craving novelty. anger over there. So anyway, now the reason I brought the guitar over, and if this was a video podcast, you would see that I draw on my guitar.
That's beautiful.
Sharpie, that's my wife back when she gave me. This is the first guitar she ever gave me. Now I have lots of guitars, but we were still dating then, so she took a big chance and bought me a guitar. This is an old Ovation, and it's chipped on the headstock because I had it in class and kids would borrow it. Someone dropped it. I mean, all my stuff has those sure. marks. Scar tissue from kids. I don't care. It's part of what I care about. What the guitar and any instrument has the power to do, I believe, is read and rewind emotion. Okay, so I'm going to try and explain that. So the first time I picked up a guitar, I didn't know any chords. I just put my finger on a string, and I would hit to see what differences there were. I finally got an old man to tune it. So I had a tuned guitar, but no YouTube at all. So I'm just kind of inventing. So I accidentally found this is E minor. Well, E minor has a certain resonance, a certain place, like, right? Now listen to the difference between a minor and D. Minor and D. C. Now think about that. E minor is the dark of night. D is the realization that the sun will come up. C is the sun just cresting the hill. I can go back to sad again. I can work through a pantheon of emotions. Mm. And the thing about guitar is that it's touching your chest. It's weird.
You're feeling the vibrations.
You're wearing them. It's part of you. And you can actually tune to how you feel. So you come home from school and you're not E minor, you're freaking A minor. It's even sadder. So today, in eighth grade, I wore those orange pants that mom got at the yard sale. And Audrey came up and said in front of 100 people, "Do you know that you have the whole ass blown out of your pants?" She asked the question, "Now do you answer it straight up?" I did. I said, "Yes, I enjoy the breeze." Because what are you going to say? What are you going to say? And kids can be mean. So you come home and you kind of play your sadness. You play your problem. You play your truth, whatever that is. And you don't have to know many chords to get started. Sometimes you're just making up the chords. You don't even know what they are. But the more you learn and the more minors you learn, right? Most country music is weird. It's in three chords with one minor sometimes. Sometimes no minors at all. So how do they do so much sadness, alcoholism, and losing the farm with all major chords? That's crazy, right? I have a song on YouTube called Songs You Can Play in Three Chords, and I just go on and on and on and on with all these songs you can play in three chords, because I start kids with those three chords. Yeah. Now, actually, I start them with Horse With No Name, because it's E minor, and then you do, if you can see, but they can't, but if you're playing E minor and your second finger goes up one, your third finger goes down one, that's the second chord. That's all the chords in that song. So here we go. E minor. On the first part of the journey. Hey. Can you chill? Can you? Come on. I know you like each other. Come on. Still a teacher, man. Just different. Anyway, I can get a kid doing that in 5 minutes, maybe 2 minutes. So it's one of the first lessons I do. It's not about making it hard. It's about actually making it so easy you're accidentally playing it. And when they hear it, they go, "Oh my gosh, it sounds like that song." Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Now here's a three chord song. And you can do tons of songs with that. So guitar is such an inviting thing. So is the ukulele. And lots of kids have access to a ukulele these days. It just got real popular. It's even, the chords are even simpler on the ukulele. So I'll start a lot of kids with ukulele. I always have guitars around here that I can loan, because you got kids that don't have one. But even that, like right now, I was just playing this old Ovation. But let's say I've been doing this forever and ever, is that they don't have the Ovation. They don't have a guitar. And even if they did, it wouldn't have strings. And they can't afford strings. Even though they're $15, they got to wait for Christmas to get strings. So I say, "Does your mom have an iPhone?" "Yes, she does." "Does your mom?" "Okay, let me show you a couple apps that you can use." Thank you. To play guitar. This is one called Pocket Guitar. Pocket Guitar. And I know you're seeing this, but basically turns my phone into a fretboard. Right, and turn it up a little bit.
For people listening, it is literally the screen looks like guitar strings that he's going to be able to strum on the phone.
Let's save the photos. Okay, here we go. Okay, now the difference is, now this is a C major, and I've got it tapped to play, so you don't have to. But if I strum that, this is a G major, D. Now if I move my phone, the accelerometer is a whammy bar, right? Now you can also do cool things like put your mouth over the speaker and sound kind of like a, what is that? "Do you feel like I do?" You know that?
And I don't.
So I can just get a kid started. Now here's the thing I talk about. When you learn a stringed instrument, the first thing you learn is that it hurts and no one told you. Now, no one wants to be surprised like that. It hurts and no one told me. Math hurts and no one told me. Writing and reading comprehension hurts and no one told me. I've been betrayed. But no, I can show you how to play three chords on this app for $1.99, and it doesn't hurt. There are no blisters. I think most kids aren't braver than blisters. They get to blisters and they quit. And almost all of us in your house somewhere, there's a guilty guitar that you see when you look in that closet and it looks back at you and goes, "Brent, you're going to play me. Remember COVID? Well, I'm still in here, man. And I'm warping because you didn't tune me down." Pick it up. You know, now it's going to hurt. So what's my job as a teacher? To get you to want to rock so badly that you will endure pain until you get to calluses. And then you don't need me anymore. You're on your way. So I have got to build a concert. I got to make sure people are coming. Now you know why they're coming. You can't not be there that night. You got to play. So sorry, right now working with my kid, and he's working on piano for this recital. And, you know, he's learning Great Balls of Fire because, you know, and I don't teach him everything about Jerry Lee Lewis yet. He's nine. But that song, it's fun to play.
Yeah.
And so while he does theory, he was kind of bogging down in theory. So I said, okay, I'm going to come from the other end of the tunnel and we're going to do performance. We're going to care more about hair gel than we do about playing chords perfectly. I want you to have an attitude about this. So now he's up there, and if he plays it five times, he gets atomic, remember atomic fireballs, those cinnamon? Yeah, he gets one of those for every five times he plays that song. So I'm using Great Balls of Fire to teach Great Balls of Fire. Hey, I don't care. I don't care. Bribery, whatever. If you're a purist and you think, no, it's what I'm doing. So I'm a dad. I'm 57 years old, and I've got a nine-year-old, same wife. I didn't start over with another wife. We just kind of accidentally had another kid, which is awesome. And I believe the universe said, Kevin, if you're going to keep talking about educating kids, you have to have the objectivity of having a fresh one. So boom, here's another kid. And I've been so blessed just to have this kid. I love just being a dad again. It's weird because millennial parents won't talk to me because they think I'm the granddad. And we had them say, I know you come every time, but is his dad ever going to pick him up?
Oh. I'm
like, what do you say? I am the dad. And they're like, stop creeping on us, old man. It's lonely being a 57-year-old father. But and people try to give you advice about parenting. I'm like, I got a 32-year-old, okay? Yeah. And
I've done this before.
I've been down this road, but thanks a lot. I appreciate the. And I'm raising the most Renaissance kid you've ever seen. He can play the blues. You know, he knows the old music. He knows School of Rock. He knows all that stuff. And yet he knows today's music too. And he can do analog things. He paints. He does art. We do a lot of maker stuff, tons of maker stuff. He's got his own Etsy channel where he sells his artwork. I'm teaching him financial literacy to kind of combat my childhood of poverty, or to make sure my kids understand how money works and how success is made. He's just an interesting kid. And I know he's going to be out of sync with the kids his age. I know. It's just going to happen. I don't care. I'm trying to raise him to be proud of being a unicorn and that sharpen his horn, not to dull it or amputate it for anyone. Man. Anyone that doesn't like it, stick it in their butt, you know, whatever you got to. But don't apologize for who you are ever. And so and I'm brave enough to do that now. As a younger father, there were times I should have stood up more. I was trying to get along with other people, and I should have. You don't know when you're younger, but you need to bare your teeth once in a while because it matters more than you think it does. My other kid, you know, he struggled with some bullying and some things that happened. He wrote a novel and a curriculum to go with it, and he's a great teacher, but, you know, he's got some scar tissue. Schools can be tough. Schools can be tough places. Another reason I like the arts is because there was always this secret club of the arts, and they weren't all nice. Some of them were mean. But there was a certain sameness to the fact that we were all in our lair, the bat cave, if you will, producing art in different ways. And so you could be accepted pretty readily, you know. It didn't matter what you wore, because maybe Brent chooses to wear that. Maybe he didn't have to go to a yard sale and is wearing high water pants. Maybe he actually is trying to start a trend. There's a willingness to give you the benefit of the doubt. And think about when you need that the most, when you're adolescent.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
That's when you're most vulnerable to people blowing your flame out. That's when you should be allowed to try on a million costumes and try to decide who you might be, because you got the rest of your life to toil. But this is your time. This is your time to see, who am I? Am I a singer? My big dream in eighth grade, I wanted to write a song. It would become the soundtrack to a movie I wrote and directed. I wanted to win an Oscar, and I had all these plans, and I needed plans like that to survive my daily reality. My life was so hard that my plans had to be bigger than the pain of that reality. And I tell kids, don't waste pain, paint with it, draw with it, sing with it, play your guitar with it, show up to work because of it. Do not give up. Do not give up. Don't prove them right. Show them they don't know you yet. You know, take that pain and paint with it. Dance with your demons, but lead One more time. Dance with your demons, but lead. Don't let them drive. Your demons can build your life. They're your authenticity. There are rich kids who have everything that can't even begin to imagine why you're so creative. Mm. And you're creative because you've lived in a separate world where you were surviving, and now that becomes your studio.
Yeah.
Let's do something about that. And I love it. It's like a pirate mentality. Oh, me hearties, we'll take the ship. You know, and there's this sort of, you know, and with the podcast, you know, all right, we're doing something crazy, or we've leveraged ourselves to number 25 in the country. You know, how can we go to number one? You know, and those kinds of conversations, you know, big ideas kids have. And then the rest of their lives, they're going to remember that. You probably get those phone calls from those kids back then who say that was the biggest thing they did, probably the thing they remember most.
They don't. And then, yes, and I've written about that in my book, that like the kids who write to you and reach out to you, they're not saying, boy, that lesson on long division, oof, changed my life. No, it's the little things. It's the, I had one student when I reached out, when I was writing the book, I wanted to know, what do you remember about being in my class? And one of the students said, it didn't feel like school. And I think that's
interesting that can be a compliment.
Yeah. It didn't feel like school.
And that's the other problem too, is that when you do that, you're always under threat. You just are. And people will, it doesn't dawn on people sometimes why your kids are so loyal, why your kids love your class. The first thing they think is that you must be easy. Now, you know, and I know that if you're that easy teacher, they're going to eat your lunch by Halloween.
Yeah.
That doesn't work.
Those are not the favorite teachers.
That you trusted them to do something. I think that they have to think you could get fired. I think we are their surrogate self-belief until they find their own.
Mm.
So if they're not worried about getting Mr. Coley?
Yes.
Mr. Coley fired. Now they work hard to make sure. You ever notice how your kids, when you get a walkthrough evaluation, how your kids will be totally cool, or yeah, they won't. And you can know everything about your relationship with your kids, yeah, by how suddenly they're acting almost sadly institutionally perfect. Mm-hmm. You hope they don't stay that way, but because they care about you, and they know, yeah, if you go, they might get, God, they don't know who they're going to get, but they sure don't want to take that chance. That's how you know you got something going on, that they've got your back. And it, there becomes this moment, you know this, after they've graduated, when they call you and say, I got it together. I finally got it together. I couldn't back then, and I'm sorry, I was such a pill, but I finally got it together. I just want to thank you for seeing what I might become and believing in it more than I did until I did. Mm. That's the best thing I'd ever did as a teacher, believing in kids.
And
it costs something. It does cost something for you.
It does, but it's worth it. And Kevin, my goodness, again, 33 hertz. You've had me the whole time, and I'm pretty confident in saying that anyone listening, you have inspired me, and I'm sure you have inspired them to take a risk. And I loved what you just said. Be the belief in them until they can believe in themselves. You're the surrogate believer until they're able to do that.
Last soundbite. I believe you can flip a kid like you flip a house. Notice the value from the curb that no one else saw. Shore up the foundation. Invest in daily improvements and watch the value rise. I know you've seen that. I know we've all seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stop believing that. I think you can flip a kid in an hour. I think you can flip an adult in an hour. And it's mm-hmm. just, it's your belief. It's your belief. So find it again. COVID knocked it out of a lot of us. It did. I've got teachers who come to me and they talk and they cry and they say, I lost my mojo. I lost my mom. They talk about all their losses. And I say, okay, what do we still got? We still got a chance tomorrow to make a difference for kids.
Mm.
Let's go do that. Like I said, and know that we're never going to be wealthy. We're always going to be rich, but we'll never be wealthy. We have wealth. It's just tied up in kids.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do that. Let's take that, turn the volume up to 11 and break off the damn knob. All right, I'm done talking.
Oh, man. Kevin, mic drop, unintended. It's like that. That's perfect. Thank you so much. Truly, and again, for everyone listening, kevinhoneycutt.org. He's got, I mean, if you want to invite him to come and speak, I think he's, you've got information on your site to have, you can come and do for your school or your organization what he has done for this podcast episode. So
I like to talk to kids too. That's my favorite thing. So if you get me to come and talk to teachers, I'll give you half off the next day and let me talk to kids all day. I'm talking pre-K 12, all of them. Give them to me in the gym, give them to me, and I don't care where. What I'm going to do is make them all believe, make them all want to try, I don't know, try to get us all on the same page again. It's been tough for a while.
It has, but like you said, but it's not too late to turn around. You can flip a student in an hour, you can flip an adult in an hour, and you have flipped in about the hour that we've been talking. I think you flipped anyone who's been listening, and I wouldn't. You've inspired me. So, Kevin, thank you. Truly.
Thanks for the chance. I appreciate it, Brent. Thank you.
You got it. And for everyone else, thanks for listening. Again, if you haven't already done so, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or you can listen on the podcast page at brentcoley.com. Kevin, thank you. Listeners, thank you. And until next time, everyone, have a good one.